opening night films for us.
And so I didn't get to see a preview of The Wind Rises, but it's something I've been wanting to see. You want to kind of give us a little capsule of that?
Yeah, it is Hayao Miyazaki's final film, one of the founders of Studio Ghibli. We've done Studio Ghibli retrospectives in the past, and we're actually going to be doing another one in March. But this is reportedly his final film, his retirement film. It's about the man who created basically Japan's most fierce war plane during World War II.
And it's been controversial because of that in many respects, but it's also, you have to look at it from their perspective, that this was, you know, a grand noble effort on this part. And the film itself, I mean, I've seen clips of it, you know, online, and it's just beautiful.
It's gorgeous. And across, you're right, across the cultural divide, we might view it as odd subject matter for a kids' film. It's animated, but
I don't think his work is really kids' films, though. You know,
not
they're
necessarily.
They're very adult films. I mean, they're not like anime, you know, manga kind of, you know, R-rated, but they've got very strong themes that are, you know, very emotional, you know, and moving.
And their appeal is widespread. You're right; they appeal to all ages.
Well, you mentioned Belle, and that's another one that I want to see because it's got a mixed-race character in the late 18th century England, and that also debuts at Portland International Film Festival. It's called Belle, and it's based on the real-life story of Dido Elizabeth Belle, who was the daughter of a British naval officer and an African woman who, you know, who came to live in England during that time, and it was... I think the film was based on this painting where there was an African woman with this, you know, 17th century kind of Marie Antoinette looking girl, you know, in the picture and in the painting. And it just sounds like a wonderful, you know, period piece.
Right. We've often opened up PIFF with a period piece. And if anime is not your thing and you don't decide to go see The Wind Rises at the Witzel Auditorium,
you got two different worlds there to choose from.
You've got options.
Now, I did screen the Oscar-nominated Best Foreign Language Film, The Missing Picture, and that is by Rithi Panha, and it tells his personal story about the killing fields of Cambodia through archival footage. But also, and I want to have Morgan weigh in on this too, mm-hmm. These dioramas that he constructed, because when you think about it, they, you know, they represent the missing people and the missing photographs from the time of the killing fields and his, you know, his past before that in Cambodia. And I found it very moving, simple, but yet poetic and innovative, because if you think about what happened to, you know, during the genocidal period, they did lose lives, but they also lost a lot of their history and the documents of that history.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you brought up the poetic angle, because I think every facet of this film is truly doing new things with voiceover, with the way the images are presented. You know, the history of these war images, which is kind of what Pan is hinting around, the famous photographs from Vietnam or other wars that have become iconic. You know, you see the one on Woody Allen's wall in one of his movies blown up to huge size. I can't remember the film right now, but anyway, he's getting around the idea that all that, the people were wiped out and the entire history of it was wiped out as well. So it's got a deeper resonance in that way. And like you said, I saw the film at another festival before we brought it here, and it's just a wonderful film. It's, like I said, highly poetic, and the way he gets at the feelings involved with being a survivor of this is something that can't be missed, I think.
What festival did you see it at?
I saw it at Vancouver International Film Festival this year, which is in October, and tend to go there every year and check out stuff for PIFF that we want to show.
Well, in talking with Bill Foster in the past, I know that that there is a lot of work that goes into selecting these films. So as part of that, also seeing films in other locations and other festivals?
Absolutely, yeah. I know Bill goes to several festivals a year, most prominent being Toronto. We have Vimeo links and DVDs coming from all over the world all year. The recruiting really never stops with PIFF. There's always, you know, there's thousands of films that are produced every year around the world, whether they're major releases or tiny films. We try to get at both sides of that with PIFF. We have a lot of things that are sort of quote-unquote audience pleasers, and we have a lot of more difficult work that's just very valuable to show culturally.
I have asked, you know, builders in the past, but there's really no way to count how many films that you get. Is there a submission process that happens year-long for this?
It's not quite year-long, so we're always looking for work actively. I run the submissions process for PIFF, and that opens in September usually and goes through late December, kind of like, you know, the final moments. We're very busily watching films and making sure we have the strongest program that we can make. With that, we get a little over 400 submissions each year usually. I'm trying to up that number for next year. Just
why?
To have a
watch. Don't you have enough to watch?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, if we can bring more people into the fold, more staff members, have a larger committee of people watching films, then it's just valuable for everybody, I think. And then we really can say that we went in every corner of the world and tried to find the best films.
Do you have different committees then that see different types of films?
Well, not really different types. There's a core group of a few of us that pretty much watch everything. I think I actually watched every single film.
You watch 400
this year.
Films?
Now, I don't always watch the whole film. I'll say if it's a feature, you know, you sort of get it halfway through. It tends to be enough, but yeah, it's definitely a lot of work and a lot of hours spent in front of a screen.
But it is fun, isn't it? I mean, it's just, absolutely, you know, to be able to say, well, I watch movies for a living, you know?
Yeah, you know, people always give me a hard time about that because it's like, yeah, it's hard work, but it just sounds so fun to everybody.
It does sound like fun.
It is a lot of fun, and it's really, really exciting because you're on the cutting edge of what's being made right now. A lot of these films are things that people probably will never see, the things maybe that we don't program. They're just small films from all over the world. Somebody had a passion project or whatever it is. And I'm just in a really fortunate position to be able to see that work and know, kind of have your finger on the pulse of worldwide filmmaking in a way.
I kind of know how you feel about that because just with, you know, Nick, for the first time you have been introducing e-screeners, I think, right, for people who want to cover PIFF, and I just felt overwhelmed by the amount of e-screeners, but then I was able to look at things very quickly and say, well, that's something I want to talk about, maybe not so much that one. So I get a right, tiny hint of what you must go through.
Right, right. This is kind,
you know,
of a pared,
it's like,
down version.
You know, 15 minutes of that, that's enough. But this film, oh my gosh, I've got to see the rest of this film.
Exactly.
So you kind of know, don't you?
Yeah, there becomes this weird internal clock in your head, where, and you sort of like see the motifs, and there's a lot of similar,
it's almost like
stuff
an audition
sometimes.
Process for, you know, for a theater person, like, next, you
precisely,
know?
Yeah, exactly. As hard as that is to say, because I don't want to be that person.
I know.
You know, there's only 24 hours in a day. So.
But so much, and then so we get the benefit of the best film. So you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, talking with Morgan Ruff and Nick Bruno of Northwest Film Center. And we're talking about the Portland International Film Festival, running February 6th through the 22nd. And we've talked a little bit about the process and some of the films that are opening. But if you want to follow along, and I recommend this, go to nwfilm.org/PIFF, and you can follow along and check out the schedule page, because it just sort of lays out everything. So I recommend you go online and do that right now. Now, we have a short amount of time, and I want to get to some highlights. Some of the films that I thought, you know, I gave a thumbs up to was this Polish film, Aftermath. It took a while for it to unfold, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, that I probably wouldn't have got into as much if I just heard about it. But it really built to such a great, almost like a psychological thriller climax here. It's about two estranged brothers, and they uncover this horrific secret about World War II that affects not only their village, but their entire country, you know, and their lives, you know, all of that mixed into what happened during World War II. And it just reminds me of all the untold stories of atrocities that have happened that we, you know, may or may not know about. And they uncovered one in their, you know, in their own family history. So I would definitely give a thumbs up. Did you like that one?
You know, actually, I haven't seen that one. I haven't seen all the films.
You haven't?
I haven't. No, I mean, Bill, you know, it's Bill and me. We're kind of like working together on it. So
they're a tag team.
We're a tag
team.
Well,
yeah,
I recommend exactly. that one. So another one is this Butterfly's Dream. It's set in 1941 before the war in a mining town on the Black Sea coast. And two young poets are in love with the same woman. And it's a great slice of life. And a lot of what I like about these international films is you get to see what life was like, you know, in a different time period, in a different country, and in a different culture. And it really brings that out by just seeing this film.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting that you brought those two up because we've been maybe not criticized. I mean, maybe it's something about the state of filmmaking in the world, but there's a lot of these sort of like atrocity pictures, you know, a lot of films about World War II, this kind of stuff. And that's been kind of a running theme in the international filmmaking community for ever since those events happened. And so on one hand, there's the, oh, it's very dour and depressing. And on the other hand, it's opening people up to that experience in that world. And that, to me, is far more valuable than being a little sad at the end of the movie. You know,
well, maybe I kind of like to be a little sad at the end of the movie. Because another one I wanted to talk about is Mary Queen of Scots, because I hadn't heard this kind of, or I haven't seen this kind of take on Mary Queen of Scots. Usually these historical period pieces are very, you know, straight-laced, and you know what's going to happen. She's going to die at the end, right? And so we have all this confrontation between Elizabeth and Mary, which never really happened, you know? And so this film is from Switzerland, and it has both English and film spoken, and it's a sumptuous historical drama, but this performance by Camille Rutherford? Yeah, Camille Rutherford as Mary is just, I found it just mesmerizing. She's this young woman, and all she really wants is love, and she's supposed to be this queen. And, you know, just how she moves through her short life is fascinating to me.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, with the historical pictures, too, with Mary, Queen of Scots, you know, that's a well-known story. She dies at the end, yes, but it's more about what the filmmaker does with that story in the interim and where that takes you and opens up new avenues to understanding the story that is somewhat familiar to people. So I think that film, yeah, is a very effective way of showing how a life can be lived, and
it's almost a documentary feel to it, too.
Right, absolutely.
Real life documentary film. And then, you know, we mentioned, you know, that there are a lot of sad movies, but Ernest and Celestine, you know, it's an animated film, but, you know, Nick, isn't that a sweet film? I mean, it's just so sweet. It's about a bear and a mouse that have an unlikely friendship.
Well, it's one that I'm actually waiting to see.
Okay,
I want to see
it theatrically,
it but I'm really excited about it because it's from the directors of, two of the directors that worked on the picture worked on a film that maybe some people who went to PIFF a couple of years ago remember, called A Town Called Panic. It's a really zany animated feature that has underwater sea creatures and crazy songs that are completely against the grain and just all these unexpected abrupt editing techniques. Just a lovely film. So I'm excited to see this new one. And that it got an Oscar nomination is only, you know,
I think that's great.
Icing on the cake.
It really is. And then you get the exact, I mean, this is what I love about the variety of the film festival, the Portland International Film Festival, is that, and then you got this sweet film, and then you got the almost exact counter to that. It's almost a horror, well, it is a horror film, an animated film with clay figures called The Apostle. And that's from Spain, and it starts off with two convicts, you know, and one ends up going to a small village, and it's possessed by this mysterious curse that the village has been under for more than 600 years, and it builds. I mean, I don't want to say it's like a zombie film, but in some respects, it almost is about, you know, kind of like that. It has that kind of pacing to it and that kind of horror to it, and it's animation. And I don't think that you kind of see that, I mean, in American films.
Definitely not. That's an interesting film in those respects that you just said. That could have very easily been a selection for our PIFF After Dark series, too, which we're bringing back this year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that's this idea of sort of more culty kind of films, horror stuff or thrillers that would have normally been kind of midnight movies in a different era. And that's coming back to a certain extent. And I mean, this is Portland we're talking about, so there's a huge audience for that kind of stuff, we already know. We're doing 6 films this year on the Fridays and Saturdays of the festival at midnight at the Cinema 21, the biggest of which title-wise is probably The Sacrament, which is Ty West's new film. He's kind of this new cult director. He's been involved with Eli Roth and other sort of big names in the new indie horror movement.
You might remember his title, The House of the Devil. That was a big, made a big splash a couple of years ago.
No, I don't. I'm not generally into horror. That's why I like The Apostle. Yeah.
And Ty West is coming, so he'll be in the house for our Piff After Dark screening on the first Saturday of the festival.
Well, so that is something that maybe is for a younger crowd then. You think the Piff After Dark?
Well,
or people who just like
that
to be
they
scared
start at
a
midnight,
little bit,
maybe. Yeah, yeah. But I think they're sort of for everybody, really.
So beyond, okay. So we've talked about that. We've talked about some of the general films. What are some of your best picks? Mm. What are you present? I mean, you've been waiting to see a lot of films. I mean, and that must be a horrible temptation to you because you have access to all these e-screeners. And
we certainly have access. whether or not we have time, that's
time?
The big question. Yeah. But I think the best thing I've seen so far is a Polish film called Ida. It's about a young woman who is at a convent. She's about to take her vows to become a nun. And she finds out that she has an aunt who she never knew about. And a horrible discovery is unearthed about her connection and her family's connection to the Holocaust. It's beautifully shot in black and white. It's a near wordless performance by the lead actress. I cannot recommend it enough.
And how about you, Morgan?
Well, my pick, my most anticipated film, which I've already seen but I can't wait to see again, it's kind of idiosyncratic. It's a movie called La Ultima Película. It's a Mexican film. It stars this guy, Alex Ross Perry, who's a filmmaker in his own right and has done some things that could be broadly labeled mumblecore in the Noah Baumbach kind of vein. But this is a film where he's a filmmaker and decides to go to Mexico to make a film about the Mayan apocalypse of 2012 that was supposedly going to happen.
Yeah, right.
And
phew.
It becomes,
I didn't.
Right, exactly.
Dodge that one.
But this great film came out of it. He goes down there and it becomes this kind of Don Quixote-esque thing. He has a guy that he's supposed to meet and who shows him around Mexico. And it's just this crazy journey that they shot on 11 different types of cameras, everything from 35 millimeter down to an iPhone and all kinds of technology in between.
Oh, interesting.
It is one of the most insane films I've ever seen. I can't promise.
See, what's the name again?
La Ultima Película. It's under Mexico in our schedule and has the Mexican title. It's a riff on the Dennis Hopper movie, The Last Movie, which he made in the early 70s, kind of in a post-Easy Rider moment and was just completely off the wall. This is beyond off the
sounds
wall.
Sounds incredibly experimental.
It's so experimental, but it's hilarious
and accessible
and touching.
At the same
it's
time.
Pretty accessible, I think, for something so experimental. So that's my pick. I have sort of weird tastes. Take it with a
well,
grain
see,
of salt.
Well, see, that's the
Give
thing. You
try.
Have this wide range. You
exactly,
know, you have the
yeah.
wide range. So
that's what PIFF's all about.
And you know, you can go to nwfilm.org and then look at the PIFF, you know, slash PIFF and look at the schedule. And I love that it's country or name of a movie. It's, you know, you can choose how you want to view it or special, you know, special projects. Like, for instance, you could just say, if you just like short films. You have actually a lot more offerings, I think, this year. Maybe I'm just imagining it, but it just seems like there's a lot more nights of short films this year.
There are 5 whole showcases.
Yeah, and usually it's only 2 maybe or 3. I don't know.
I think we've been about 4.
Yeah.
4.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like there's, and there's one
twice.
That's just Oregon, you know, Oregon
right.
shortcuts. And then there are some Oregon people in the other international mm-hmm. shortcuts too, but I really enjoy the short films a lot, and it's and talk about variety. So a shout out for Kimberly Warner. She made a
yes.
short feature. She's a Portland filmmaker who makes this film that just so describes every single time I've talked to a ballerina, or, you know, what the pain is. You know, you have to see it to know what I'm talking about, but it's called Nine, and it really is beautifully shot. And, you know, if you like ballet, but you wonder what it is that, you know, young ballerinas go through, see this film. And there's another feature called Record. I'm not sure if it's Record or Record, by David Lyons, about a father and his blind daughter dealing with their loss. Now, that one is not in the Oregon cuts, but it's in the international one. But that one is also quite beautiful. And it was shot in Oregon. And I thought it looked like an international film, you know, to me, because it didn't look like Oregon to me. I don't know, like it would look like Ireland or something, you know. Right. So it's so beautiful. And then there's this really simple but to me moving one, that a documentary short I enjoyed, The Apothecary. I'm not sure where that is. That's probably in the international section.
It's in one of the international
and
sections.
It's about a rural pharmacist and the impact he has on the lives around him. He's the only, you know, pharmacist for, I don't know, 45 miles or 50 miles, and probably the only medical person too in this little town. And I just found just that simple slice of life effective for me and moving. And you really felt like you got to know him too in, what, 15 minutes?
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was one of my favorite shorts that I watched, and I was happy to program that film. It's just an amazing little documentary that isn't superfluous. It just gets at the heart of the story. And like you say, I mean, this guy is everything for his town. It's really, truly an amazing film. I think everybody should go see it.
I think that for an independent filmmaker, having these short films seen is, you know, even though we live in the age of YouTube and Vimeo, I think that that it says something for their work, doesn't it?
Well, there's less and less opportunities for these films to be shown theatrically now, certainly. And short films have always kind of been, unfortunately, for better or worse, the redheaded stepchild of the film industry. There's really no place to program them in a way that makes sense. So getting your short film in a festival, that's probably your best way of getting it in front of an audience. You mentioned the shortcuts, the Oregon shortcuts, the Oregon Filmmakers Showcase, which is on February 11th. It's a Tuesday at 8:30. That is, it just happens that this year we have all women filmmakers represented.
Really notice that. Is that what it was?
They're
all women, huh?
Yeah, they brought great, great films, and it just sorted out that way, and we're really happy about that.
I like that.
And one of the films in that showcase is a new film by Oscar nominee Irene Taylor Brodsky, One Last Hug. That is one of the highlights of the fest, in my opinion.
So. Good shout out. Good shout out. How about you, Morgan?
Well, in that Oregon program, I am a huge fan of Stephanie Huff's work. She works with us at the Film Center. No, you know, so she got in the festival. It's okay.
What is the film?
Her film Heart is just this great portrait of a couple of brothers, and it's shot on 16mm. It's a beautiful film, really affecting. I mean, people should just come to that whole program because every film is great. But those are definitely a couple highlights.
I love Heart. Yeah. I've seen it twice theatrically, and I'm going to see it the third time.
Wow, so that is it comes very highly recommended.
High praise.
The Portland International Film Festival opens February 6th and runs through the 22nd. For more info, go to nwfilm.org. And you can also visit stageandstudio.org, where I have some film highlights and as well as photos and links. And you can check out the archive of past Stage and Studio shows there as well. So we have like 1 minute. You have, what is your final pick that you want to just throw out there? And final shout out that you want to throw in there.
Mm-hmm.
Time is a ticking.
Well, the I'm incredibly excited to see The Last of the Unjust, the new Claude Lanzmann documentary. It's sort of a companion piece to his Shoah. It's one of the first interviews that he conducted while making Shoah. And it's sort of his orphan for years. And here we are now finally being able to see it. It's 4 hours, but what an opportunity.
That Morgan? Film does look truly incredible. My final pick is a Chinese film called Trap Street, which I also saw at Vancouver this year. It's kind of a film about the surveillance culture that we're all living in now. It's very
I saw that one too, and I was going to mention
that. It's an excellent film. It's if you've been following the Edward Snowden story, I think it's really worth seeing. I mean, even if you haven't, this is important stuff to know about. It shows a little slice of Chinese culture that we maybe don't think about, caught up in all the other issues that get talked about in this country about China.
I'm glad you mentioned that, but we're running out of time. Sure. So Morgan Ruff and Nick Bruno, thank you so much for filling in for Bill Foster, who we wish well, from the Northwest Film Center. And, you know, have fun this year. Break legs on the festival. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. If you missed any of this show, I'll have this interview online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as podcast on iTunes, and you can like us on the facebook.com/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going out with another song by David Ornette Cherry at davidornettecherry.com.
KBOO is proud to present the 2014 Grateful Dead and Friends Marathon, Saturday, February 8th from 12 noon to 12 midnight. This year's show will feature the Grateful Dead, the Friends, and Come Right Back Around Again. That's the KBOO Grateful Dead and Friends Marathon, broadcasting live on FM at 90.7 and streaming over the World Wide Web at kboo.fm on Saturday, February 8th, 12 noon to 12 midnight. Log on, tune in, and rock out.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com.
Andy Warhol with a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol,
silver screen, hang him on. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guests this week are Crystal South, Stephen Slappy, and Theo Downs Le Guin. Crystal South is a multidisciplinary artist, designer, and writer whose piece, Identify Yourself, was included in Piker's TBA Festival last year. Stephen Slappy is the chair of the Bachelor of Fine Arts in Video and Sound at the Pacific Northwest College of Art. Theo Downs Le Guin is the owner and director of the Up4 Gallery in the Pearl District. Welcome to KBOO, Crystal and Stephen, and welcome back, Theo. It's lovely to have you here at KBOO.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. We wanted to talk about what is digital art, because it seems to be everywhere, but nobody really knows what it is, and a lot of people kind of distrust it. They're not sure it's really art. So can somebody try and define it? How about Crystal?
Well, it's a very hard thing to define. I define it by works of art that involve a computer in the production or distribution of the work. But it goes far back in history and has a pretty broad definition.
Mm-hmm. What was an early name for it?
Net art, when it first started, and now it's sort of changed to be internet art and then post-internet art and post-post-internet art, all which have different sort of relationships to where the work exists, whether it exists entirely online or exists in a physical incarnation as well, or people who are taking work that they've developed online and creating physical objects from that.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, you teach students all the time, and you know they're in the thick of this. How would you define it?
Just to add to what Crystal's saying, I would say that it's not that the term digital art is inaccurate; it's that it's imprecise. After all, I would say that most artists working today use some form of digital technology in the process of making their work. So net art is in use by some folks, but to other people it's already stale. These terms are often imposed by outsiders, so it's hard to kind of really nail that down. But frankly, I'd say the term artist by itself would be sufficient, because I think these are just creative people who are using the tools that are available to them.
Mm-hmm. And Theo, your gallery, Upfall Gallery, specializes in what I'm calling digital art. So what do you talk about when people come in to look at stuff?
I am actually pretty comfortable with the term digital art, just because it is imprecise and somewhat all-encompassing, but differentiates those artists.
Oh, okay. Carry on this mic, Steve.
Thanks. Theo. I am comfortable with that term because it's kind of all-encompassing and imprecise, which in this situation might be a good thing. It does differentiate someone who paints with no digital process. I think, you know, net art is problematic because so many of these artists are working in ways that may not involve the internet at all, either as a means of production or a means of display. But I also agree that the terms are in some ways unimportant, and I doubt that any term we're using now we're going to be using 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Crystal, you did an amazing essay, which anyone can read online. It's called Identify Yourself. It's at idyourself.com. You did it for Pica, and it came about, they asked you to do something, and then it kind of developed and became like 70 pages long.
Kristen Kennedy, who I've known for years, and she taught a class at Portland State where I was writing from a very art historical perspective.